Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey, everybody, this is Angela, and I'm in West Palm Beach with John, Jim, and Bill. And today we're taking on the topic of family and what is a family. You will hear us talk a lot and probably have about permanency-focused advocacy. And we talk a lot about getting kids home and getting them to their permanent home. And you may assume by that that we mean the traditional model of reunification, adoption. And what we want to talk about today is kind of some of the harder questions around that. And that sometimes that answer isn't so easy. And sometimes you have to look a little deeper in your role as a children's attorney.
And I think what we've encountered in all the years that we've done this is that each case is unique. And again, it's stressing that nothing is cookie cutter. For me, I've represented a lot of teenagers, and in talking with them and looking at them, I'm looking for who is going to be in their life when they're 18, when they're now an adult. And we all know we relied on our parents. I relied on my mom till I was 40 in a lot of ways. I mean, who are they going to rely on? And the family that they may have landed with because of a neglect case or a dependency case, is that the family that they are going to have? Is it a family?
When you're talking about connection, you're probably talking about the truest measure we have for figuring out whether our client is in a family or not. And that's talking about the birth parents or some other family construct. You know, with everything we're talking about today, most of our cases are going to have a traditional either birth family or adoptive family that works, where there's connection, and we'll see it go. But we have to at least be open to the concept of non-traditional families or the fact that family could be something completely different than what we're thinking of it as, because what we think of as a traditional family might just not be available for our clients. With the birth parents, if you're looking for connection as the main ingredient or determining factor that a family exists, you've got clients, young clients, that just simply don't show any connection occasionally. You'll see a young client who's been raised 6-7 years. I've had one recently, 7 years with a birth mother. We had to terminate rights. She wasn't a terrible person. She, you know, very childlike herself. We had to terminate rights. She happened to show up at a later court hearing. The client's response, the young client was there because we didn't think the birth mother would be there. The young client's response was, "Oh, my mother got a new tattoo." So I had a sense of relief because I thought, well, we didn't traumatize this child by breaking a separation. There's also concerns about what's been done to her level of ability to attach, clearly, by being raised by this parent. But clearly there is no family connection there with the traditional birth family.
And you do see that. You see, right? You see kids who don't have any connection to their birth family. Yet we work within a system that talks about keeping families together. That's our reunification is the primary goal. But as the child's attorney, you do have to look for, and I guess I'd call them outliers, because most kids do feel a connection to their birth parents. I think that's fair to say. But there are these kids who, either because of how they're made, how they're wired, or how they've been treated, you know, their parent has just not been a parent in any capacity to them. They've acted like a best friend or not a good friend, maybe, in some cases, and they just don't have any connection. But the flip side of that is the child who's been removed and is in a home because the foster mom happened to be the only foster mom who would answer the phone at 8:30 on a Tuesday night for the placement office. So the child goes into that home. And so the case proceeds and the birth family fades away and the system, the agency, everyone moves towards permanence with the Jones family. But does your client have a connection to the Jones family? And why this is an important question is because failed adoptions are a very real thing in this country. It's not something people like to talk about because we all need to believe that adoption is forever. That's sort of a sacred thing that we all believe, right? We celebrate National Adoption Day. But if you talk to adult adoptees, they will say that the day of their adoption is also often a day of mourning. Everyone is celebrating. Everyone is giving balloons and cake and presents, and the whole family's there taking pictures. Everyone's happy. Inside, for the child, it's also an ending to something. So, and if there's not a beginning to go with that ending, if there's not a connection to who they're being adopted by, you're creating a recipe for a disaster. And Bill, you know, from representing the older teens, how many of them were in fact further damaged by bad adoptive placements, that where they didn't really have a family.
I had a child who I had was able to get into a home that this couple, husband and wife, were millionaires. They lived in one of the biggest houses I've ever been in my life. And the child was placed there. She was willing to look at them as adoptive parents. She was a teenager, and they loved her and wanted her badly. And I went to it for a visit one day over to the home, because I go to the home for visits, and just to see how she's doing. We're getting ready to get this case to the adoption phase. And I'm talking to her, and she says, "Get me out of here." And I said, "Are you crazy? You have everything. They can give you everything in your life that you could never have." And she goes, "Get me out of here. I don't like them, and I don't want to be here." Oh my God, that was so difficult. Yet it goes back to, it's even sadder to me if you let a child live with someone when there's no connection. That is something I was trying to force on her. And all she wanted was a connection. She didn't want millions of dollars. She wanted a connection. And it was like, oh my God, I have to honor that. She wants the connection. I'm going to get her out. And I did.
And I think it's, you know, as adults, I think we're guilty of not looking at things from a child's perspective and giving. We want to believe that as adults, we could parent any child, right? You could put any child in our home and we would parent that child and it would work. And unless you've tried it, you probably haven't had that particular bubble burst. But adult plus child does not equal family. You can't just add water, stir, and get an instant family. I think the thing we need to be looking for as children's attorneys is connection.
And to find that, we've got to tune into our clients, like Bill did. Like, you know, with the older ones, they'll talk to you. With the younger ones, they'll talk to you, or they'll show you where the connection is. And just to kind of reverse the flow towards the birth parent here, I have a similar fact pattern where everything is saying terminate both parents' rights, but the little girl's connection to the mother. Not to the father, but to the mother. And so I've got a really easy path. I've got the grounds to terminate. I can just go with the flow, with the agency, with the court, with everyone who is ready to terminate. Or I can take on a mountain of work putting this mother back together, convincing everyone we need to do it. If I honor my client's connection and she's showing me in neon blinking signs which way her family is, then that's what I do. And so that's what we've done in that case. That requires a lot of advocacy, but that plays into what our role as a children's lawyer is in finding a family.
And sometimes it's not the most popular view. You may say to yourself, oh my God, I'm about to go into a courtroom and argue against the agency, the other attorneys in the room, potentially even the parents' attorneys, and maybe I'm going to take an unpopular role with the team that's here, a team of attorneys, yet this is what the child wants. I understand that the connection is over here with person B. It's not person A that everyone thinks it is. And I've got to go in and do the unpopular thing, but it's very popular with my client.
So as I'm hearing you talk, I'm thinking about when I was a brand new attorney and I'm going into court and all the lawyers and the judge are headed in one direction. And like, who am I to step in? And I'm not trained in that. I don't have, you know, I got some training like a lot of folks do, but I mean, deciding about a connection and trying to kind of overturn the whole system can seem overwhelming. It would be easy out of fear to say, I can't do that because I am not the qualified family. You know, I don't go out and find families. I don't do this, but you are the expert on the child and what and you, in theory, are in the best position to see whether that connection really exists or whether breaking that bond, Jim, like in your case, is going to result in a better outcome for your client or what your client even wants.
Right, right. And that's something you'll learn as you go, I think, is you've got the parent down on the ground with your boot on their neck and the law says, go ahead and finish it. But the you're going to destroy your client when you do that. And so you've got to stop yourself from just robotically practicing law and start thinking about the long term that Bill was talking about here, and that who's going to be here for this child when they're 19, when they're 21.
And I think it's also, we have a bias in the sense that we feel we know what's best. I think we have to admit that. It doesn't mean we do, but I'm sure we feel it. And we see, like I saw this millionaire couple, this is what my child needs, this client needs. I know she's going to see it. Do you know what I mean? But we have to get away from that. We don't always necessarily know. We have to really watch and listen.
Yeah, you have to ask yourself, I think the question you ask yourself is who is my client's tribe? Who do they feel that connection to? A little 9-year-old girl just kind of slapped me upside the head just this week with some information about that, you know, some messaging from her that maybe birth mom isn't her tribe. And it's a relatively new case for me, and it's giving me pause and making me rethink everything I think I know about the case, because she doesn't want to see her mom. And so my position has to be less visits, not no visits, but less visits, because I don't want to make the relationship worse, first of all, by forcing more visits. But more importantly, I'm starting to wonder, how disconnected is she from this woman who I thought would be her tribe, would be where she would have her connection? She seems to be leaning more towards her foster family early in the case. And of course, I have to ferret out all the various reasons for that. But I think it's important to look for signs of connection throughout your representation and ask yourself who's the tribe. But the flip side of that too is, what are your client's actual options, right? You can only get them somewhere if there is a destination. You can't.
Well, we have the legal options, the ones the law tells us to look at, and in some states, in a certain order. Those are all theoretically always there, but they're not always what's best, right? And so there's a practical side to it.
And the practical side, I think, is somewhat controversial, right? Because, as I said, adoption is somewhat of a sacred construct, and part of the construct is that there's an adoptive home for every child. Now, I actually happen to believe that, but I don't believe we in this nation have the system that can find an adoptive home for every child. We are broken down not only into states with an interstate compact that works deviously against children, we are broken down into circuits and counties and cities and districts, and you can't even reach across county lines to poach a foster parent or an adoptive parent. You know, it's difficult for me to get a child adopted from from a foster home in Dade County, because Dade County recruited and trained that adoptive parent. Let alone, you know, maybe my client's adoptive home is in Nevada, Las Vegas. What's Las Vegas, Nevada? What's wrong with growing up in Las Vegas? You know, but I can't access those homes in Las Vegas for my clients. So I was in the unfortunate situation of having to meet with a 12-year-old boy who had started to act up in his pre-adoptive foster home, and you know, they want to adopt him, but he tells me, I don't want to be adopted by them. I'm not changing my name. I had to give him the reality. Okay. I couldn't give him the pie in the sky. Adoption is for everyone. You will be happy. I had to say, this is your best option. You don't feel a connection to these people. I get it. But your option is for me to move you into a group home. On some level, these people love you. They are treating you very well. They are giving you a lot of things, material things that you happen to value. He happens to really value the things they're giving him. Not just material things, but activities, keeping him busy, good schools, all that stuff. I said, these are your options. if you want to be in a group home, like you saw happen to some of your siblings, that's the path I can help you journey down. My professional opinion, and I told him, you're 12, but I'm speaking to you as if you are a young man, because unfortunately, you have to grow up now and help me make this adult decision. This is your best option, even though you're not feeling it. I get it. I get you're not feeling it, but these are the cards on the table.
And it should be noted that you're talking about a client who, like his older siblings, is expressly telling you he's not interested in connection anywhere because of his identification with his birth family. He's just,
very true.
So it's not like there may be some other family he could connect to. This is a client who's being pretty clear with, I'm not connecting.
And while we talk a lot about adoption, but obviously a lot of times we also look at the parents, even when the agency is not. I mean, imagine being pulled from your parent, no matter how awful it was. It, just imagine that break. And a lot of times it is the parent that they want. Again, even though we see just an awful prospect in it, if that's the connection, we have to really look at it and, you know, do what's the, there's a word I'm not remembering, but we really have to take the time to see if it is viable for the child, even though to us, in the face of it, looking on the documents, it's repugnant.
Yeah, and one of the saddest things we do, but we do it, I don't know if other jurisdictions do it, I'm sure some people do it and other people will find it very controversial, is we return permanently committed children whose parental rights are terminated, to their birth parents. Sometimes we basically come all the way around full circle after several years of failing to get them adopted, and we give them back to their birth parents. I'm doing that on a case right now, and it's really sort of an admission, right, that we got it wrong. We terminated your rights, and now here we are knocking on your door to return your child to you.
This is going to sound, probably most people are not going to agree with this, but in that vein, you know, I had a child that was in all different homes, and his mother was never, ever, ever going to succeed. But yet she was never terminated because there was somewhat of a connection, but he was never going to be able to go there. Now he's 17, and I know at 18 he's going to go with his mother. He's telling me, and you could just tell, he loves his mother despite what has brought him into care. She lives in a car, and he wants to go to her now. He's not yet 18. I want to live with my mom. But she lives in a car, you know. Yeah. But that's his option, and that's his connection.
That's his connection. That's his tribe, and that's what I think we need as children's attorneys to really have at the forefront of our thinking is where are they connected? Because that's, as human beings, we need connection. And for our clients to be successful, they have to be connected. And if you put them somewhere where they're not connected, you are really creating a recipe for disaster down the road.
Right. And in my example, I should finish it. Obviously, I no judge was going to let him live in a car. But I thought by advocating for the mother, I could get services in place that would maybe finally, since he's about to be 18 and he's going to live with her anyway, that could help them succeed despite everything that's occurred in the past.
I have to make an observation here, because as we're talking, some of the things we're saying almost contradict each other. And I think the broad point here is federal policy comes and goes. You know, the old days, it was kids languishing in foster care forever. And so, you know, we get ASFA, and so then we have this construct. And then today's buzzwords are around family first, and we really need to. And we can sort of agree with all of those things. But at the end of the day, sometimes, in rare circumstances, kids will need to grow up in a family knowing that when they turn 18, they're going to go to their parents. And that's okay, even in the face of it not being favored in federal policy, that we have to, as permanency focused as we are, at the end of the day, you have to look at the client before you and figure out where is the connection, what is going to be their best outcome when they are an adult. And sometimes that flies in the face of everything that we're told and taught, but you have to be open to that.
Right. I mean, I think permanency focused means just that. Permanent. Like, what's going to be their permanent destination? I mean, and we would like that to be with speed. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes you have to give the kid space and let them breathe. and set them up in an environment where they can form connections. And that's the long game in adoptions that agencies don't always have the patience for. But it's putting the child in a group home, getting them involved in activities, exposing them to a bunch of adults and friends and other social environments where they might just form a connection. Kids have surprised me that way. Suddenly their mentor or their teacher or their coach is expressing an interest, and that becomes their family.
Right. I've had that exact situation, a teacher in a school.
But it's a long game, right?
It's a long game. Yep.
And it's being open to the fact that family is not just defined by blood or by a court order or a placement office's decision at midnight on a Tuesday. It's defined by the bond, and it's our client who can inform us of that. So the children's attorney has got to be open and observant and watching for that.
And it's our role to do that. As sometimes it feels like, well, I'm not a family creator, but in a sense you are. It's actually your client who's creating the family, truly. You're the one who's just pushing it forward.
Their specific legal problem is being in the custody of the state, and they need to be in the custody of a family. And I think what we're saying here today is, in most of your cases, that's an obvious answer. What's their family? But in many of them, in several of them, important ones, the outliers, if you will, you're going to need to focus more on whether or not that's really a family.
So as we do this podcast, we really try very hard to give you practical solutions. Today, I think what we've done, perhaps, is give you some really important questions that you need to ask in your cases, and we hope it's been useful to you. Thanks for joining us today, and we hope you'll join us next time. You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.